Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It's Bud Pod 114. Actually, appropriately, Phil, I was going to say 114. I would say 14, strong contender for the most awkward age.
14. Yeah, I think that's... I think, now you say that, I think 14 was the worst year of my life. Oh, wait. No, I tell a lie. 13 was, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 13 was. I think maybe 13 is worse than 14.
Do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, because you're not a girl, not yet a woman, Pierre.
Yes, that's true. Yes, that is true. Quote.
Brittany, our girl, our Brittany. You're not a girl, not yet a woman at 13.
Is that what she said when she was 13?
No, her song. I'm not a girl, not yet a woman. Are you not familiar with the Spears canon?
Not on the same level as you, clearly. Which song was this? Yeah. But how old was she when she sang the song?
She would have been 20, early 20s.
Okay, that's less creepy. Fine. Because she was a Disney kid or whatever, Mickey Mouse Club.
She was a Disney kid. She was missing Mickey Mouse Club. Yeah, I watched the BBC documentary about her and the controversy around, like, who owns her estate currently.
Yes, Free Britney is the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? She made some absolute bangers. Listening to those songs, I was like, shit, I think she's basically David Bowie, actually.
Do you think so?
I mean, I don't think she wrote the songs, but I mean, it's hit upon hit, Pierre. I think she should be up there with David Bowie for the most musically influential figures of our lifetime.
Do you think? Well, influential, that's actually fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, but also just like rate of bangers. I mean, they don't push the boat out musically, I suppose, as David Bowie did. But
yeah,
they're cracking songs there. She wanted to be like a star when she was a kid, and her mom was one of these parents who would like take her to pageants and say, "My girl's gonna be a star," and it worked. Too well, maybe.
Yeah, all those pageants and stuff are deeply, deeply concerning, I'd say.
Very American.
I'd be so disappointed if those pageants weren't literally just all FBI sting operations.
All to catch a predator. Single, we catch like 12 predators per event. It's the most efficient.
Do you think... there'd be FBI agents like, in my day, one man would sit and he'd work hard and he'd catch a single predator. But now, these modern methods, they're just, it's like trawling the sea for fish with nets. There's no skill to it.
Yeah, I wonder how many they can get in one sting operation. How many predators they can catch in one sting operation. I'd just like, at one little kid's beauty pageant.
Yeah, well then Chris Hansen or whoever the host of To Catch a Predator was would have to like walk out onto the stage like the host. It's too big. You can't just do it individually. He'd have to come. Yeah,
people are like, are you ready for Little Miss Louisiana 2021? And everyone's like, yeah, please welcome your host, Chris Hansen. And Chris Hansen comes out and goes, hi, so what are you doing here? And everyone in the audience just scrambles and runs out of their seats.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like footage of when everyone's jumping out of the way of that moving train in the first ever movie. Everyone's leaping over seats. And then they're like, the doors are locked, like the big like escape doors you get in a gym, double doors.
Yeah.
They're
They've locked the doors from the outside. No.
Chris Hansen's just slowly walking towards him like the Terminator. What are you doing here? You like talent shows? Yeah, that would be good. If you're a nonce, then Chris Hansen is the Terminator, I suppose.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess he's your worst nightmare.
Yeah. I wonder if they do fear
him. I didn't know his
name.
I didn't know his name was Chris Hansen. What a life he has.
I'm the guy. Yeah, what does he say at dinner parties? I'm the pedo catching guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I turn it into entertainment.
Yeah, I make it fun.
Oh gosh.
Do you think when he's in a bar people buy him drinks?
Yeah, although they'd be very careful to make it clear they've not put anything in it.
do you think they'd be like, thank you for your service or something, you know?
I guess so. I guess those like crazy sort of save the children people. That's what they're called, right? The Pizzagate people?
Yeah, he must be kind of a hero for them, like set them down the path. Yeah, they think the world is run by evil pedos or lizards or something, and they have all these kids, so they can...
Evil pedo cannibals.
That's right. And they want their blood? They need the young blood?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah. I will say their internal theology isn't really clear.
Like the logic of their universe.
Yeah, exactly. If it was a comic book, I'd be like, yeah.
Is this sci-fi or is this fantasy?
Yeah. Yeah, you can't Star Wars your way out of this one, Pizzagate. You can't trick me. Who's the villain here? How does this power work exactly? Where's the science? If you're going to mention science, you have to justify it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you'd said that, like, huge sections of America would self-radicalize, and then that radicalization would spread to other sort of Western countries or around the world a little bit. I like that in itself is not so crazy. And if you'd said, oh, it was to do with being very right-wing or very... I go, yeah, that all tracks. I can imagine that happening, sure. But if you'd said it was to do with pedo-cannibal, like... They need their blood because it makes them more powerful and... I really would not have bet on that.
Mm. I mean, there's something sort of beautiful about it in that because of the internet, we found out that there are equally fucking insane people in every country, of all creeds and cultures, of all races and beliefs. They are just all fucking... There are millions of nutters who share in common... with the fellow nutters, the fact that they're real nutters. And nutters of different languages, different histories. They're just fucking nutters. And the internet has shown us that, you know, there's more that connects us than divides us, Pierre.
That is true. That,
for some people, that is being fucking nuts.
That's true. Tinfoil hats around the world.
Yeah. Tinfoil hats on the house for everyone.
Just loads of people in tinfoil hats holding hands like underneath a rainbow. Kind of swaying from side to side.
Yeah. Have you been? One more week, Pierre, until a bit more freedom, baby.
One more week until...
Cinema
day. One more week until society's left bum cheek is raised slightly higher to relieve just a little more of the pressure of the fart of freedom.
Have you been finding yourself socially actually anxious, Pierre? Are you finding yourself able to maintain light conversation? Have you forgotten the skill?
I'm a little rusty. I haven't found myself socially anxious so much as anxious when, like, well, remembering what it's like to be in a crowd is weird.
Mm.
More than a few people.
Just thinking about it. Yeah, of course.
More than a few people in a tube carriage and you sort of think, oof.
I feel like my object permanence with regards to people has been reset. You know, like how children below a certain age, once you take something out of sight to them, it doesn't exist anymore.
Peekaboo.
I feel that way with peekaboo, exactly. I feel that way with people now. I feel like I might have people peekaboo. And you know what I mean? So I can't... I think having more than six people in a room, I'd be like, I wouldn't be able to keep track.
Yeah.
You know, and like if I turn my head, I'd forget one of them was in the room, and and people are going to have to be presented to me in a big grid, and their square lights up when they start talking.
Yeah, and when they
I
start
need to be
talking,
able to see everyone's face in one sort of fly's vision snapshot.
And when they start talking, they walk really close to you, and they fill your vision with their one face.
Yeah, if you have that setting, if you have that theater setting or whatever on, when you go to a party and you start talking to someone, if someone else starts talking, they shove the person you're talking to out of the way and stick their face in front of your face.
Even if they're just doing something like coughing or sneezing.
Or farting. Yeah, if you're having a conversation with someone and someone else needs to fart, they will come up and shove the person out of the way and just go...
With their,
and then walk off.
With their face fully in your face. Like they're trying to intimidate you to leave. Imagine doing that. Imagine grabbing the sides of someone's head and putting your face right in front of theirs, like the Godfather, and just farting.
Yeah, like some sort of bonobo's threat. Like something a chimp would do to scare off a rival male.
That's One of the best early punk bands was Bonobo's Threat, Phil. They invented the whole smashing your instruments thing, but then they also threw their feces because of the name, and people hated it.
Yeah, that was a step too far for Bonobo's Threat. That was their undoing, really. It was their unpooing.
It was Bonobo's Threat's unpooing. Yeah. Yeah, I find myself a little anxious. I'll tell you what's making me anxious for reals, Phil, is that I, listeners, this is for you, Podbuds, I'm doing some live comedy in 3 weeks.
Wow, 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 wow. Wee-wee-wee-wee-wee. Live comedy in this day and age.
I know. I have agreed, listeners, to do a week, Monday to Saturday... at the Soho Theatre in London, in the downstairs cabaret room, because cabaret is the least diseasable room. And it's Monday the 24th of May to Saturday the 29th of May, 7 p.m. Anyone who bought tickets for my old Soho show that was cancelled 2 months before it could happen because of the COVID, you can transfer your tickets over. I assume you've had an email about this. Anyway, I figured it was worth saying. But yeah, I'm doing this show from the 2019 Fringe. I'm going to have to update it. I'm going to have to fiddle with it.
Amazing. Wait, so that's 24th till 29th you're doing that?
This month. Inclusive, 24th to the 29th.
Sweet, okay.
The whole week, baby.
Well, yeah, I'm definitely going to come.
I'm really
hoping. And then I'll go to see Pierre's show.
Yeah, that's right. I hope that the material hasn't aged too badly, Phil. I open with Delicious Bat Soup. That's the name of that routine.
Yeah, yeah. How delicious, nutritious, and safe bat soup is.
Yeah. And then there's that bit of the show where I get people... at the end of the show, it's a bit like church, except you have to turn and cough into the mouth of the person next to you and say, peace be with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I always found that the most moving part of the show.
Well, I mean, not to spoil anything, but it's a callback to the routine about how much I love coughing that I do in the first 10 minutes. And everyone goes, oh, we remember. And it's very satisfying, but I don't know.
Yeah, and you get everyone to join in on the big 3-2-1 and you all cough together. Yeah, I think that'll age fine. I think that'll be fine. I think so.
I'm going to open with some classic gags. But I just flew in from Wuhan and boy, are my antibodies tired. Things like that. Classic stand-up gags.
But that, I mean, that's pretty soon. You have the soonest comeback stand-up run I know of.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when Soho got in touch and they were like, do you want to do your run again? And I was like, of course I do. And they went, it's in 3 weeks. And I went, yes, yes. And I'm genuinely the thing that's worrying me is I genuinely have not put on my stage clothes for a year and a half, and I have gotten much girthier in that time.
You're basically Batman in The Dark Knight Rises. You've got to like use that hydraulic thing to like crack your knees back open, and you're gonna have to give her the bat belt, the utility belt, a couple of extra notches. Go down to Timpson's, get him to punch him in.
I'm like when Thor is fat.
Yeah, and you got the same Norse knowledge, I suppose.
That's true. Yeah. Fat Thor.
You're Fat Thor.
I'm Fat Thor, and I'll be available for viewing in Soho at the end of the month, which is very exciting. But hopefully, people
will come. Is there a particular bit that you genuinely are? Yeah, genuinely are like that's not going to work now.
Yeah. Well, in that show, I did some stuff about the upcoming verdict in the Shamima Begum trial. Some stuff about ISIS, and I might have to just do a routine going like, "Who remembers ISIS?"
There's going to be so much of that. In stand up this year, there's going to be so much. Do you remember? There's going to be so much. Anyone remember? A blank.
It's going to be like a Peter Kay convention. Do you remember ISIS? Do you remember? They'd swear allegiance in a lone wolf format, so there was no way to tell who was doing it. Do you remember?
I mean, you could sort of semi-update it with that story from sort of near the beginning of the pandemic where ISIS were telling its members not to go to Europe because it was too dangerous.
Yes, exactly, yeah. We did it. We got him. All it took was to suicide bomb ourselves with plague.
Yeah. Are you feeling anxious about... You're feeling anxious, Pierre?
I definitely need to, like... I haven't performed many gigs. Like, normally, Phil, you and I would be doing a few gigs a week, say.
Yeah.
On average.
I'll let you say that. Yeah.
And we've probably done 2 weeks worth of gigs in, like, a year and a half.
That's a pretty good observation. Yeah, I reckon it's about that.
So that's very nuts. Crazy and very, like... Yeah, so and listeners, most comedians will agree, I think, that you start to feel a bit rusty if you go on holiday and don't do any stand-up for like a week or two. So this is going to be very, very interesting. I will say the small number of gigs I've done, and I did a gig a few weeks ago, say, or like Zoom gigs, or they've gone very well, so that's something.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I just also you just want people to come because it's socially distanced. So if I don't sell it out, I look like a real COVID knobhead.
Oh, I'm sure you will. It'll be full of pod buds. It'll be full of pod buds celebrating.
They'll just be jacking it in the aisles.
And also, I think like people will be slipping and sliding all over the place. I think the effects of disruption do plateau. You know what I mean? I think like the effect of not doing stand-up for a month is probably about the same as not doing it for a year.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you don't forget how to ride a bike.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah.
But I do hope your anxiety isn't giving you too much mental health, Pierre. We were talking about this earlier.
Yeah. People keep saying mental health as if it's the thing that's wrong.
Yeah, it's like, I've got mental health. Mental health is really dangerous, everyone. You have to be sure not to catch mental health.
It's one of my real pet peeves.
Yeah, it's my real pet peeve. And you can't get angry at people because usually they've got mental health. So you can't, you don't want to compound their mental health by saying that's what you're being wrong. Technically, you have mental illness, not mental health. Because in the moment, that's rarely the most important thing.
Yeah, or they're being very nice.
It does grind my gears.
Or they're being very nice about other people with mental health.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if someone says, oh, I have really... it's hard, isn't it? Because you could say, I have really bad mental health.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But then they go... They think that that's like saying, I have really bad, gas.
Right, yeah.
That they can just then say mental health. And it's like, no. I have bad mental health, or... I my mental health is suffering or declining, or it's a state of positive existence. And yeah, it's if someone is saying, "Oh, when people correct my grammar, it makes me want to kill myself. I'm suffering from mental health."
You just have to squeeze your lips together, like just keeping your mouth shut.
Yeah, you can't take them aside and go, "I heard what you said, but yeah."
And I hope you get better. I just want to point out that you're actually getting it wrong when you say you've got mental health.
I would like to be very clear that what I am doing in this moment is prioritizing grammatical correctness and abstract concept over you and your brain. And how you feel. I care more about the words that don't... Even though everyone understood what you said, I still am more interested in that than your genuine human problem.
Even though everyone understood what you said. It took everyone just a fraction of a second longer than it needed to.
Yeah, and I won't stand for it.
But yeah, well, I hope your upcoming Soho run isn't giving you too much mental health, Pierre.
I think if I'm lucky and it all goes well and lots of people come, which I hope they do, I will get some really good mental health from it, and I won't just get mental health. I'll get good mental health.
Yeah. Mental healthy. You'll get mental healthy.
I'll get mental healthy. Well, I'm going to have to get mentally healthy to fit my fat arse into my trousers.
Has it really got that bad?
Oh boy, yeah. I've got stand up about this, but when I get fat, it's like the whole body, like evenly, like when you enlarge a picture in Photoshop.
Yeah. Or like when you, I don't know if you ever played like SmackDown or Raw.
Yeah.
The WWE video games, but if you create your own character and you just like slide the weight scale to the right, it all just expands at the same rate.
Exactly. That's exactly what I do.
The legs, the arms, the head. Yeah.
So that's exactly my body is a character designer body.
Yeah.
But what that means is like you know how sometimes you see those guys in their 50s and they have a big old beer belly, but they're still wearing the skinny jeans they wore when they were in their 20s. So I can't do that because it's the whole thing. So everything, all the clothes have to change or none of them do. Whereas if you get fat in one place, you can kind of go, okay, I need a new shirt, but the trousers are fine or whatever. But
you have
issue.
To get a full new wardrobe.
Yeah, so I'm trying to. I'm worried about that, and I'm too. I'm too. I don't even want to try the trousers on now. In case it gives me mental health. I don't, because it really would give me mental health, to be fair. If I try them on now and it's like, essentially, it's like trying to put a sock on my whole leg, then I will be upset with myself. So I'm worried about that. And so as a result, my stage clothes, my suit trousers and my jacket and my shirt, and they're in a suit carrier bag that I last used, you know, in the West End with Frank Skinner. And they're just in my cupboard like the telltale heart, just waiting for me. The challenger.
Yeah. Yeah. Come, Pierre. Remember us.
Squeeze us.
Let us give you a hug.
Squeeze us onto your ham-like body.
Yes. Yes, like we are cotton condoms.
Yes. Like a diver's wetsuit. A very formal wetsuit. Ugh, yeah. So that's
exciting, though.
That's exciting.
It's exciting.
It's an exciting mixture of can he, will he, will we.
Can he, will we, will we.
Can he, will we, will we.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to watch the gradual easing of lockdown and sort of as I expected, it's not the single great hurrah. You know, it's all just sort of slow and bit by bit, and
people would have wanted like a VE day, you know.
Yeah, but it's not gonna happen unless like there's one day next year where everyone decides to have an extra New Year's or something.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. God. Yeah. I mean, it's gonna be, maybe summer is gonna be like the fucking fall of Rome. People are just gonna go insane. Do you think this will change the British social character in some way?
No, I don't. People keep going, I wonder how this will change society. We're going to have a better appreciation for the social services and the people who look after us. And no, we won't. Maybe for like a year, people say, remember what the nurses and the doctors did, but we'll go back. People always go back. We always go back. We don't change. People don't change. So that's why when people are talking about the new normal, I'm like, no, the second we can go back, we will. And there's a reason people end up a certain way. And there's a reason society takes a certain shape. And I think part of it is changeable depending on, you know, new technologies or what becomes most convenient. But, you know, selfishness will return. It didn't really go away. The office will return eventually. I don't know. Society exists in a particular way for a reason, you know. So I know I don't think it will change the British psyche. I really don't.
I think
we'll be appreciative for things.
Yeah.
But appreciative not of other people, but of our own freedoms.
Yes. And, yeah.
The conveniences we used to take for granted, but I sound like a cynic here, but I don't think that will fundamentally change.
I think more people will wear masks.
Yeah, I guess that probably makes sense.
I know a few people who are like before the pandemic, they were the kind of people who say, you know, I just hate being sick. Oh, I'm so bad at being sick. I hate being sick.
Yeah.
Those people are like big mask converts, I think.
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of one of those people that social distancing has sort of been fine for. Because I wasn't touching the stuff on the tube even before this all kicked off. I mastered like tube surfing. Like, I can stand in the middle of the tube not holding anything and I won't fall over.
Yeah.
And I've not got sick once, Pierre, since March last year. I've not got sick of anything once.
That's nuts, isn't it?
Nothing at all. I from time to time, I get like a little scratch in my throat. And I'm like, is this it? And the next morning, I'm fine. And I've just not got sick at all.
I might
stick to not touching people for a while.
I remember when we were recording when all this started happening. And how is this for crazy listeners? I think we might have done more episodes of Bud Pod distanced through the plague than not.
Yeah, it's mad. I look back like episode 52 and it's already a pandemic episode. I'm like, what?
Yeah,
I
could have 52. Sworn
this was like maybe 30 episodes at most we've done like this, but yeah, it's coming up to most of them now.
It's fucking crazy. And I remember early on you saying how much you were like, you wanted to get it so you could have had it.
Right. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. I mean, that was very much the thinking at the time. We were still in herd immunity mode back then.
Everyone was doing it.
Yeah. We're all like, how many old people are we willing to sacrifice to keep living normally?
Yeah.
And as we realized, the number, like, there was a number. This is something we're not being honest with ourselves about. There was definitely a number of all people who were willing to happily sacrifice. But that number started getting too big, even for the most callous of us to allow. And so we had to lock down. But there was definitely a number.
Well, we did something very clever in this country, which was we let as many of the old people die anyway as possible and then got rid of normal life.
Yeah.
It was really clever. Really clever, unique approach.
And also really clever of the Conservative Party to only do well right at the end. Because it seems that I'm not the only one who has been reading Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow, Pierre. Because one of the lessons is the peak end rule. And that is about how what you remember of an experience is the most intense moment, the peak, and how it ended. And it's an average between the two. And because the Tories, you know, with the vaccination program have ended very well, presuming this is the end.
Yeah.
People are likely to remember, to actually think of them quite positively, as has been borne out in the recent council elections.
That's true. Yeah. We've got the trouble of, as you say, the vaccine boost, a booster jab.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a booster jab from the voters.
Right. Yeah.
They've got their second jab.
Yeah, they've been given immunity. The Tory government has been given immunity from the opposition for another fucking year or whatever.
Till next winter. Yeah. Till the opposition can mutate into a form that can bypass this immunity. Yes. Actually quite a good analogy. I kind of like this.
It is, yeah. When will Labour find its escape variant leader?
Yeah. When will Labour finally choose a leader with an extended protein spike? Capable of penetrating the outer cells of a Tory majority. I think Starmer is suffering from a case of lawyer brain.
Explain.
So if you have any friends who are lawyers, you might recognize the symptoms of lawyer brain, if not the term itself. If you spend your life in an incredibly strict and formalized environment like the law, and, you know, he's a QC and he took on News International and won and blah, 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 public prosecutor. So he's like a very high, you know, he's about as high as you can get as a lawyer before they just make you a judge, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's his whole life. Law. Then that's just the way you think. It's how your brain thinks.
Law. That's what lawyers say as they walk to
law. Law. Yeah, and the judges go, judge. And the witnesses, the defendant, crime. It's very easy to tell who's who in a court. So he's got lawyer brain, and in court or in the law, if you say something reckless or that you can't prove, you get disbarred or fired or you go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just last week or 2 weeks ago, a lawyer in Liverpool who represented a client like through legal aid, like for free, accepted a gift from the client's dad of like 100 quid, 150 quid.
Oh.
Fired. Done.
Really?
Done forever.
For 100 quid.
150, I think. And they were like, you have to turn it down. Gifts, you can't have gifts. The whole point of this is the fee is the fee, and it does this, and you can't. It could be interpreted or misinterpreted. It brings the profession into disrepute. Blah blah blah. You're done. No more lawyering for you forever for your whole life.
Crackers.
So it's an environment of heavy consequence. Whereas politics, especially recently, you can just come in anyone you want, and everyone's fine with it.
You can come in someone and charge it to the British taxpayer somehow.
Yes, you could literally say, I found an American businesswoman who seems like a person who'd have a disgusting affair with a politician from a cheap movie. From a made-for-TV thriller. She's very sort of sassy and sort of like kind of bimbo-y. and I'm going to fuck her on a private jet and right before the Olympic ceremony as well, and no one's going to do a damn thing about it, and I'm going to give her $100,000.
Wait, what are you talking about? I don't know about this.
Boris Johnson and Jennifer Arcuri.
Oh, he was on a jet.
I think they flew on a private jet on business trips together.
That's pretty badass, actually.
I mean, there were other people on the jet. I'm not saying they fucked in a jet. Again, I must be careful because of the law. I have to be more careful than the Prime Minister's actual corruption.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
On this podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I gave her $100,000.
It's enough to make you mental health, Pierre.
It's enough to give you mental health.
It's really... the state of this country is enough to give you mental health.
Nothing gives me more mental health than Boris Johnson, I think.
He drives me fucking mental health, that guy.
But it's amazing. Like, she's come out and said that she was riding his whatever his dick looks like on the couch in their house. Maybe it was in her flat. Hours before, he was at the Olympics opening ceremony as the mayor of London, sat between Princess Margaret and his wife.
What a day!
What a fucking house of cards existence he's built for himself.
Yeah, but he's done it. He's bloody done it. He's gone out there and he's lived the life we all secretly want to live.
Do you think that's why people keep voting for him? Or do you think it's just rising property prices in northeastern regional areas?
He's the Adam Sandler of politics.
He's the Sandman. He keeps making all this guff, yeah. But anyway, the point with Keir Starmer having lawyer brain is that it means he can't do, or he can't say the kind of stuff that gets good cut through, like rabble rousing stuff, because he's incredibly professionally cautious.
Yeah. He can't say we will give everyone free chocolate biscuits every day for the rest of their lives, because he's gonna go, oh, that might be legally binding.
Yeah, and he can't just say, you know, would you leave the Prime Minister alone with your wife? Because he'll go, oh, well, that could be defamatory. Oh, that's very rude. No, we should focus on this incredibly niche, you know, or policy. People love policies. No, they don't.
Why is politics seemingly... seemingly free of defamation law? I swear people in politics... Is there like some sort of tacit agreement, some honor amongst thieves that we can shit on each other and we won't sue each other?
Well, it can... It's not defamation if it's honestly held opinion.
Eh? Huh?
Well, like,
so you just have to prove that you really believe someone is a murderer.
No. That's a crime. You're accusing them of a crime. That's not an opinion.
Okay.
So if I say Phil does paintings and I think the paintings are shit.
Not true, but I'm still hurt.
Yeah.
I don't paint, but I'm still hurt by that. Yeah.
That's my opinion. That's not defamatory. That's my opinion on the work.
Okay.
Whereas if someone accuses you of something that isn't a crime but is bad, mm-hmm. You need to prove that it's damaged you somehow. You need to prove that someone emailed you and say, we're not going to hire you for the blah blah anymore because so-and-so accused you of being a rude, nasty boy.
But then if the other person can prove that they truly believe me to be a rude, nasty boy, does that let them off?
Well, maybe it could. It just depends on the specifics of the case. But then you'd have to go to court, and then if you could prove damages, you could say, well... Is it so true that it was worth me losing this money or this work or this reputation or whatever else? And then you have a very long, expensive court battle. The time where you don't have to prove a damn thing is if they accuse you of an imprisonable crime.
Mm-hmm.
So murder, sexual assault, certain levels of fraud and corruption or whatever. If the penalty could ever be prison, then that automatically you can say, well, prove it or that's libel or slander.
Slanderous
gossip.
Scandalous.
But yeah, Jennifer Arcuri is just going around telling us all about all the different times Boris Johnson spaffed in her and gave her money. And everyone's just gone, tee-hee-hee, and just ignored it.
Yeah, well, people don't give a shit. People don't care. We don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I'm not a Boris Johnson fan, and I don't give a shit who he smaffs in. I don't care.
But so, he gave her 100 grand, Phil. It doesn't matter.
Of whose money?
The London Mayoral Business Development Fund.
Well,
of your money.
She was developing his boner. That's something.
Well, she developed a business. That's certainly true.
Right.
It's just that the business was riding that terrifying blonde haystack of a man. And teaching IT, or something to do with IT.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm sure it's all fine, actually, Phil. But wouldn't it be nice if someone looked into it properly? Or cared. But they don't. I mean, people barely cared about Prince Andrew. People just went, did you go to Pedo Island? And he went, yeah. And everyone went, oh, that's terrible. Anyway.
I wonder what people care about now. It's an interesting thought experiment. What are people outraged by now? I really don't know. I feel like everyone is outraged by so many different things that no one transgression could accumulate enough outrage to lose a job over. You know what I mean?
There's too much outrage, and so no one knows where to spend their valuable outrage dollar.
That's right. So I don't think, I'm not sure there's anything, any one thing any one person can do in public office.
I think it's still just being a pedo.
Sorry?
Being a pedo, being a nonce.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably it.
The Milo Yiannopoulos rule.
Yeah.
Making a bunch of seemingly pro-pedophilia points. Sort of vaguely saying that you think it's okay for much older priests to be extremely friendly with 14-year-old boys, and then even the far right will say, okay, no. Okay, no.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. It's just going to have to be an enormous game of to catch a predator. That's if that's the only thing that matters, it's just about desperately trying to find some sort of proof that your political opponent is a nonce.
What a future we have in store for us, Pierre.
having an affair? No, well.
No, no one cares. No one cares. Most of this country gets divorced. This is a nation.
That's true. That's very
true. This is a nation of adulterers. No one gives a shit.
This nation is sinful in the eyes of the Lord. You walk knee deep in sin.
Yeah, I mean the acceleration of sin in government, mainly due to Donald Trump. I mean, he was doing something Watergate worthy every day. So the point, yeah, like he rushed us through a century's worth of moral numbing.
That's true. That's a very good point. I'd like, when you said the acceleration of sin, first of all, excellent Christian rock band, The Acceleration of Sin. really good, even for a Christian rock band. But I just love the idea.
They pushed the boat out a little because they were coming at it from the point of maybe being a bit pro-sin.
Yeah, well, I think they got a lot of credit because the reason that they were so good at getting the attention of young people is that they didn't pretend that the sinning wasn't attractive.
Yeah, they didn't want to patronize the youth by pretending that sinning wasn't fun. Sinning is fun. That's what makes it hard to avoid.
Yeah.
And the young Christians really appreciated that candor.
That's it.
Which they don't get from any other part of the church institution.
Well, that's it. And as with all Christian rock, nothing more unnerving than seeing a bunch of young men dressed like Blink 182 in a big group prayer. Really odd. Extremely strange.
Do you know that story about the what are they called? The clown posse.
Insane clown posse.
Insane clown posse.
Yeah.
And they came out and admitted to everyone that they were hardcore Christians and all their music had been for the Lord. And all these fans were like, what?
So funny. I like the idea that the insane clown posse were like, the clue's in the name. What? Like, yeah, it's all in there. It's all in there. Don't pretend you didn't notice.
The clown band were Christian the whole time.
I when you're saying acceleration of sin, I like the idea of like a vicar standing in front of a big graph labeled sin and it's going up. Like a stock, and he's tapping it with a pointer and going,
This is bad. We don't want this. We want this. And he points it pointing down. We want that. But currently it's doing this. And it's going
yeah, he turns the whole chart upside down. This is the goal, people. Sin to go down. What I'm proposing is a deceleration of sin.
Oh, that's right. All right. Please, please, calm down, please. Everyone.
Please, please, brothers.
I don't know how to decelerate.
A monk standing up. How do you propose such a thing?
But it's funny, the acceleration of sin, as propagated by someone like Trump, has coincided with the acceleration of a kind of focus moral outrage in woke culture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
there's more sin and more fury at the sin.
But their grievances have become so specific and focused and in and of themselves tribal. They split up like the church and the woke movement so that everyone has broadly similar but slightly different belief systems. And these differences are more important than the similarities. So the small differences they have in belief over the rights of various minority groups make them hate each other. And so, the new moral outrage is so fragmented now that there's nothing we can all get behind as a single group.
That's true, Whereas the right wing are always united. They'll even just be like, well, he's a Republican that's not as good on gun control as I want him to be, but I'll still vote for him because he's Republican.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess, it's sort of like the early church where they go, well, everyone agrees that Jesus was the Son of God, but this guy thinks he was entirely divine the whole time, whereas I think he was divine in stages, or he was half divine, half mortal, or if he was mortal and then divine at the end. And then before you know it, millions of people are dead. in an enormous war.
There's that amazing Emo Phillips joke.
Yes.
Where he talks
the guy on the bridge.
He's walking over a bridge and there's a guy about to jump. Do you remember it? I can't quite remember the wording of it.
Yeah, so he says there's a guy about to kill himself on a bridge and he walks up to him and says, Hey, don't kill yourself. You have so much to live for. And the guy says, no, I don't. And he says hey, come on, you can't kill yourself. Don't you believe in God? You know? And the guy says, of course I believe in God. And then basically he goes, well, are you a Christian? Yes, I'm a Christian. Well, what are you a Baptist? The guy goes, yes, I am a Baptist. And they turn out to be like they're both the same. Like, wait, are you Baptist? Are they like Northeast Synod of 1812 Baptist? And the guy goes, yes, I am Northeast Synod of 1812 Baptist. And they go, oh my God, well I... And it goes on and on, like, incredibly specific. Like, wait, the church on the north side of town or the south side of town? And the guy goes, north side. And Emo Phillips goes, die, heretic!
and kicks him off.
Kicks him off the bridge.
Yeah, it's really good.
Emo Phillips, this is relevant to you and me trying to remember that, has a great joke where he says, I never try and write any of my material down. I keep it where it's nice and safe, in the heads of various British comedians.
Really? That's so good.
Maybe in the mines, something like that.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
God, he's good. Yeah, that's a recommendation for you guys, listeners. If you don't know Emo Phillips, he's one of the greats. Not unsung, but not sung enough.
That's right. That's right. He's one of these. He's one of these comics who, like, people say, oh, he's weird, but not really. He tells jokes for an hour. They're just very good jokes, but just because he does something weird while he's doing them, he'll always do something protracted for and long for the entire and unexplained for the entire show. So there's one where he's assembling a trombone for the first half hour while telling jokes, and then doesn't play it, and then starts disassembling it until he finishes, and then puts it back in the case. And when I saw him live in Edinburgh, he was just slowly, throughout the whole hour, just slowly pulling a pair of trousers out of his trousers. There was a pair of trousers in there, and he was just slowly pulling them out of the trousers he was wearing. And that was it. It didn't never reference it.
It's so good. It's such a funny thing. And yeah, as you say, people go, he's weird, but it's the Milton Jones rule, isn't it? It's like, what they mean is his hair's weird and he's dressed funny.
Yeah, but the stand-up is, it's about as pure an example of stand-up as you can imagine.
It's pure jokes. It doesn't really get purer than that. It's not the Mighty Boosh Live.
Yeah.
It's not freewheeling surrealism.
Yeah, I always think of that joke when I think about both hardcore religious people and hardcore online activists.
Yes. Yes, online activist is no longer an oxymoron.
Yes. You can now just put activist in your bio. You can just put whatever your job is, / activist, and people believe you.
Imagine the confidence of someone who doesn't do, like, face-to-face work with the vulnerable or their target group. Like, actual daily, like, I go to the shelter and I, you know, or I'm always writing petitions, or I'm a member of this charity and we do this, and I work there full-time, and or part-time, and I do my other job, or I care for my family. And not doing any of that, just essentially writing blogs and going, yeah, I'm an activist. Yeah, I'm helping. I'm, you know, my words in a way are the same as what all those other guys are doing.
Activist. You know what it is? It's a symptom of years of people on Question Time saying that the solution to these intractable problems is that we need to have a conversation. We need to have the conversation. We need to have a frank conversation. For years, I'd watched Question Time, and there'd be someone going, what needs to happen now about whatever it is, like whether it's gay marriage or class mobility, whatever the problem is, or racism. What needs to happen now is we need to have a frank conversation. And I'd just be thinking, this is the conversation. You're on Question Time. If the point of conversations is to promise to have further conversations, I don't really see what the end point is. But because of that culture, we're now suffering the digital equivalent of that, which is that to solve the problem is simply to talk about the problem on Instagram. But it isn't. And the conversation itself is not the solution. But people are convinced that it is. Because it's the only thing they can do, and especially over the last year, the only thing we've been able to do is say things online.
Endlessly have conversations about conversations about conversations.
Yeah, it's conversations all the way down.
It's open and frank conversations all the way down.
The franker the better.
The franker the better, I say. Open.
Please make them open. We won't stop mental health until we have the frankest, most open conversation about it in history.
Yeah. We won't ever succeed in getting any more money for it. But I'm going to burst into various meeting rooms and I'm going to listen in on their conversations and I'm going to go, Franca? When I come back after my lunch break, I want to hear
this conversation. And you should all be ashamed of how unfrank this is.
This is the least frank thing I've ever heard in my life. You there, be frank. Excuse me, you, what's your name, boy? How long you been here? Go on, be frank for me. When I get back after my meeting, I want a whole lot more frankness in this room, and if there's not, then frankly, you can all get out. It's like frank conversations are the... Well, first of all, I really enjoyed the first album of Frank Conversation. Frank Conversation
one
plays the blues.
One of the great crooners of the 60s, Frank Conversation.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. His cover of Girl from Ipanema was great. Frank Conversations are the equivalent of when companies make people do unpaid overtime every day, but then they can have a pizza.
Right.
Well, it's just like, no, we won't pay you for the fact that we expect you to work till 9 p.m. But it's Friday's pizza day.
Or when we used to do, when you're starting out, you do gigs for like, there's no money, but you can have a beer. You can have a free beer from the bar.
That's exactly it, yeah. Trying to pay your rent and beer like some kind of medieval peasant. Frank, yeah. Open and yeah, and politicians saying, let me be perfectly clear. But just think, we need a frank, an open and frank conversation. Well, let me be perfectly clear. I agree that we need a frank conversation. Just that on a loop.
Yeah, yeah. That's activism now. Well, and it was activism. It was question time then. Now it's activism now.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? That there's an element of people thinking that they're something a bit too early. And obviously you get it with stand-up. People saying, I'm a comedian. And what they mean is they're an open mic. They do it as a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah, and because there's no guild that can say, no, this person is not a chartered comedian. And anyone can say
that. Yeah. This person isn't on our scroll anywhere, so. Yeah, that's it. Whereas, like, I mean, you know, your friend and mine, James Acaster.
Oh, yes.
You know?
The comedian and broadcaster.
That's right.
James Acaster.
The comedian and broadcaster and fellow comedian, broadcaster, fellow podcaster, James Acaster. So he's done good stuff for mental health and talking about it. You know, he's done lots of talks and podcasts about it, and loads of people have gotten a lot out of that, and he's been praised for that, and rightly so. But he doesn't walk around calling himself an activist.
No. No. No, exactly. And, I mean, it's not something to... It's not a job. It's not a job to be an activist. It's not even an occupation. It's a hobby at best.
Well, unless you work for a charity.
If it's something you're going to call yourself.
But then would you call yourself a charity worker instead of an activist?
If you worked in a charity, you would, yeah. I would suppose so.
Even now I'm realizing that the word's kind of lost all meaning in my head. It just kind of means, this is something I talk about a lot.
It's also a kind of a class and perception thing. An activist, activist is like, it's actually a very middle class profession. And saying that I'm a charity worker, it doesn't have the glitz that an activist has.
I'm just, for my own curiosity, I went to Google and I typed in define activist.
I mean, it used to mean something very concrete. It used to mean you went out onto the street every day with a megaphone until you're thrown in prison.
You're a campaigner, a person who campaigns to bring about political or social change.
Oh, is that, yeah.
But then where's the campaign? It's like a blog, it's not a campaign. I also, it's quite funny, under people also ask, what activist means?
I love those automatic questions that have somehow, how have like the most grammatically incorrect formations of these questions become the suggested questions on Google? How many times have people mistyped this question that Google has gone, this must be the correct form of this question?
Yeah. How many
what means activist?
How many grandma cavemen went, what activist means? Hey, you go out, you hunt. No grandma, me no hunt, me activist. What activist means? Caveman.
It's all the result of the gradual degradation of language and the stretching of language to the limit of its meaning, where, you know, phrases like we need to organize, or we need to resist, or we're doing the work, or what. And so because these words have started to mean nothing, you can use any words you like, because there's nothing you need to qualify it with, because it itself means nothing. So an activist means nothing. Anyone can be one. And that's where we're at now.
Yeah, it's true.
Anyway, well, thanks for listening to the Sam Harris podcast with
Never forget, listeners, you are listening to the only officially anti-murder podcast.
Yes, of course. How could we forget?
We are anti-murder activists.
Yeah,
we believe that murder is bad and wrong.
It's frankly disgusting that we're the only anti-murder podcast.
We dream of a world where every podcast feels obliged to say that they are anti-murder. At the start and end of every episode.
Why are they so afraid, Pierre? This is what I want to know. Why are other podcasts so afraid to say they're anti-Pierre? Anti-murder. What? I mean, I can't imagine a podcast that's anti-Pierre. certainly not this one.
No.
But why are the other podcasts so resistant to being anti-murder? Who's gotten to them? That's what I want to say.
You know what,
who's
Phil?
Paid them off?
Their silence is deafening.
It really is. And it's disgusting, frankly. Which is another great podcast. What the fuck is happening to my words? Another great Question Time catchphrase. It's disgusting, actually. I think more than once or a couple of times, I've been able to, we're watching Question Time Live, sing along with someone in the audience, and I know when they're going to say, it's disgusting, and I've been able to sing along watching. It's disgusting, I say along
with your Zippo lighter, like, waving, lit. It's disgusting. Sing along Question Time is such a funny idea. Let me be perfectly clear. People are kind of waving.
If you could just let me finish.
Oh, that's fucking great.
A frank and open conversation. Yeah, that's the end.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. Well, frankly, listeners, it's time for the end.
And although this has been an open conversation, it's time to close the podcast.
It's time to close the podcast. Keep jacking it. Stay anti-murder.
Stay anti-murder. Please remember, Pian and I are comedians, but we're also anti-murder activists. So
we think murder is wrong.
We think murder is wrong, and frankly, we won't stop until everyone else does too.
And come see me at the Soho Theatre at the end of this month. For
yes,
goodness
most
sake.
Important take-home message is go to see Pierre at the Soho Theatre later this month.
That's
If that's a logistically viable thing for you to do.
Yes, 23rd to the 29th.
The 23rd or 24th are you starting?
Oh no, shit, 24th, you're right, I'm a stupid fucker. Oh no.
Okay.
24th of May. Go to the Soho Theatre website and look for my name is the easiest thing. 24th of May to the 29th of May, there we go.
Don't confuse him with the other Pianovellis, though.
Yeah. One of us always tells lies. I won't say which it is.
But have a good week, everyone. God, this is our final... Well, yes, this is our final no indoor dining podcast, Pierre.
Oh, yeah. God, that's
irreversibly,
true.
I remind you.
Irreversibly.
This is our irreversibly last no indoor dining episode of Bud Pod.
Gosh, that's mad, isn't it? Yeah. Brave new world.
Yeah. Great. Well, bye, everyone.
Koji, bye.
Keep jacking it. Bye-bye.